Welcome to Yours, Mine, and Ours. I'm your host, Gabrielle Cardona, and today the show is going to be about taking care of you and getting to know me. I've been on something of a hiatus for a little while. I took a break from the show because I had so many other things in my business that I wanted to get taken care of, my productions, my writing, my potential videos. And so a lot of the people who had been following me on professional websites were saying, well, what are you doing now? And who are you? I've seen of you, I've heard you, and I just want to know more about you. So today I'm going to open up the phone lines. If anybody, any of my listeners want to ask me a question about what I'm doing for work, or even about me personally, this is an opportunity I'm giving my listeners to get to know me. It's actually kind of a strange story. In the last few weeks, I had a very bad experience in a hospital, and I did want to tell people about it because it really helped me learn about myself, and it also helped me learn about the people in my life. It was an unfortunate series of events, but it definitely taught me some things about myself, and it gave me a chance to really see if I would practice what I preached to people that I gave them advice as a coach, and I really had the opportunity to say to myself, well, do you believe in your product? Well, let's see, because you have an opportunity to really show it to the world. So I'm going to go ahead and give people the opportunity to call in. The number is 888-627-6008. I'm going to be talking about a lot of things today, including my past, my business, my current status, and what I'm going to be doing in the future. So if you have a question that you've wanted to ask, I've been on LinkedIn for about 7 years now, and I have a lot of followers and a lot of connections that they've asked me personal questions. Well, now's the time I'm putting it on the air. So let's just talk about a little bit about how I became a coach, and especially a relationship coach, because when I started out about 17 years ago, life coaching was very cachet. It was very popular. Well, what was a life coach? I think the first time I actually heard of it was probably on a television afternoon talk show, and it was an expert. The host was asking for professional advice in relationships from a life coach, and that caught my attention. I thought, well, that's not a psychiatrist. That's not a counselor. Maybe it's a therapist. Well, a coach? I don't even know what that is. So I didn't really listen to what that person had to say. I Googled it. I wanted to know exactly what that industry was about. And I found out, you know what? It could be anything from a multi-level marketing guru for health products, right? Well, that's just a salesman. To someone who teaches transcendental meditation from the oriental philosophy of spirituality. Well, yeah, no, that didn't really seem like a coach to me either. So I thought about it, and after a few days, I thought, well, what's a coach? Well, like a sports coach, it's someone who teaches people how to score. They teach them how to be successful in life and to reach their goals. They give them a strategy and a game plan. I could do that. I have a lot of experience in life, and I've had some pretty interesting successes and some failures. And yeah, I want to teach people how to succeed without focusing on their problems. You know what? The truth is, I don't agree with the mental health industry or the pharmaceutical industry because I've had a lot of personal experience with them. I've gone to everything from neurologists and acupuncturists, therapists, psychiatrists, and counselors. I've been in support groups because from the time I was a very young girl, I was very different, and my mother didn't understand me. She was very confused about why I behaved the way that I did. I wasn't really sick. I was just unexplainable, not really understandable. So yeah, I was weird, and I would go to these different kinds of professionals, and they would ask me random questions, and I thought, why are you asking me such a stupid question? Leave me alone. I'm not hurting anyone. I'm not doing any damage. You just don't understand me, and that's your problem. Well, they tried to give me pills. Okay, now that really made me angry. I didn't need any pills. I was just fine. But I came to find out that in the country that we live in, that I live in the United States, the pharmaceutical industry, along with the mental health industry, is in and of itself about capitalism. So I decided at a very young age, I was not going to ascribe to or advocate anything that was synthetic or that really had the ulterior motive of making a profit. If you're going to help people, you can't be focusing on the bottom line when it came to numbers. That was something I was very passionate about. So I had that in mind as I decided I wanted to be a life coach. Well, you know what? I thought when it comes to success in life, I've had some pretty good success. As I was growing up, I had different experiences. My father taught me some very primary, some very fundamental principles about life. And as I implemented them in my personal experiences and created success for myself, I thought, wow, these are things that most people have never heard of. I just assumed that everyone knew this stuff is very basic, fundamental information. Well, it was news to a lot of people. The three most important things that my father taught me when I was a very young girl, first of all, don't lie. Don't ever lie. Well, that's a good thing to know. No, actually, it was more than that. My father and I, we'd have deep conversations. We'd go toe-to-toe and philosophical banter, and there were times when we'd even fight. Well, I kind of enjoyed that because he always gave me a good run for my money. One day he said to me, in the middle of our little conversation, he got very serious. He said, "Honey, don't lie." And I said, "Well, I'm not lying, Papa. I'm just, well, yeah, I kind of was." But and he said, no, seriously now. I'm talking seriously to you now. When you lie to strangers, you're going to miss out on some amazing opportunities. You're going to miss out on great things in life because you're going to push them away. But when you lie to friends and family, you push the most important people in your life away. You're going to die alone. But you know what, honey? When you lie to yourself, you've got no one left. You start believing your own lies, you're going to die alone. Because when you believe your own lies, nothing in your life is real anymore. And you don't even have yourself. And he walked away. And I thought, oh, what would that mean? Well, I thought about it. And he gave me some pretty good information there. How much of what we do in our life demands that we be truly honest with ourselves, that we accept the reality of what's really going on, that we come to terms with it, and that we use that information, the truth, in our life to create success. Even if that means making the changes that we need to make, nothing in your life is going to get better unless you have that reality, that honesty, and that truth. That applies to what you give yourself as much as it applies to what you give others. One of the other principles that he taught me was don't panic. He actually told me and my sister, one day we were driving in the car, and he said, "Girls, I have a question for you. It's not really a test. I just want to know your opinion. Let's say you were on a boat, and you fell off the boat. Something happened, and you started to go under the water, and your eyes, you couldn't see. You had to close your eyes, and water started going up your nose, and you started to panic, and then you were sinking down into the bottom of the ocean, and then you felt animals around you, and then you felt you had something touching your leg, and you didn't know if it was an animal or if it was just a rock, and then your lungs filled up with water, and then you couldn't breathe anymore, and then all of the organs started to stop working, and then you died. When was it over? When was it truly over for you?" And my sister and I were thinking, and I thought, well, gosh, that could be like when you fell off the boat. And I thought, well, no, but maybe it wasn't until you actually lost the air. But no, but then I'm thinking, but when your eyes were closed, but no, I think, you know what? I think it was when the organs stopped, because when your inner torn organs are stopping, then, wow, that is an excellent question. And my sister goes, well, I know the right answer. And I said, of course you do. You always know the right answer. But Papa, when is it really over? And he said, the minute you panic. Because as long as you have your wits about you, and as long as you have your maintain your thinking ability, you can find any solution to any problem, and you can get out of even a near-death situation as long as you keep your wits about you. And I thought, well, that's not true. There are some problems that are just not solvable. I mean, what are you talking about? You clearly cannot think. You're an adult and you think you're smarter than me. And then I thought about it for a couple of days and I thought, but yeah, actually, humans are pretty amazing people. They're amazing creatures. We can do seemingly magical things with that have no explanation, because we have an amazing mind and we have the ability to come up with creative solutions that don't make any sense on paper. Just don't panic, because when you do, all of your thinking ability is completely gone. Wow, that was a pretty important life lesson too. And I think my favorite one, we were just going, I think maybe to a gas station or some kind of car repair shop. And he looked at me one day, he had this kind of deviant look in his eyes as he was handing over some money. And he said, honey, remember this, it's not what you know, it's who you know. And I said, well, I don't really like him. He's kind of a jerk, this guy that you're giving money to. And he said, no, you know what? When you have connections in the right places, you don't have to pay as much as other people pay. Or sometimes they'll introduce you to someone who can offer you something even better than what they gave you. Money gets you a certain amount, but connections, people, people get you even better things than money. And I thought, wow, okay, you know what? I don't really know anybody yet that might apply to. Or do I? Well, I don't know. I'm just going to kind of think about that, sort of keep it in the back of my mind. Well, it was important for me to keep that in mind, because in third grade, I was still very socially unaccepted by the people in my life, mostly in my family, actually. And then one day, a teacher of mine said, we're going to have a special test today. We're going to give you a personality test. And I thought, oh man, how much you want to bet my mom hired this lady? She's going to give me some kind of weird psychological profile, and it's going to, and then she's going to pay her, and then I'm going to have a conference, and then I'm going to try to give me more pills. And I thought, well, you know what? Let's just have a little fun here. So I thought, I'm going to just write down bizarre answers to these questions. Well, the questions were kind of cool and I liked it. And I thought, well, okay, these aren't really mental health illness kinds of questions. They're just, what kind of stuff do you like? And I thought, okay, well, you know what? What the hell? Live on the edge. Let's be honest. Well, I couldn't believe it. When I got the test results back, it was exactly who I was. It not only said the things that I did in private that I'd never told anybody about, things that weren't even on the test questions, but it explained why I did them and how I felt when I was doing them. For the first time in my life, I was 9 years old, and I had someone, even if it was just a piece of paper, saying, you are totally okay. And then at the very bottom, it said, but you're only about 2% of the population. Well, it didn't say exactly in those words, but basically only one out of every 50 people is going to be like you. And you know what? That's okay too. Wow. Well, that gave me a peace of mind, a personal peace of mind, to know that I was always going to be different. I was always going to be special. And sometimes people weren't going to like me. And that was okay too, because for my type, that was normal. And it was actually healthy. I knew that I had to take care of myself because I was actually a good person. Now, my mom was a flight attendant, and I always remembered every time you go on an airplane, they go through the safety and they go through the masks and they go through the seatbelts and they go through the whole little display. But they always would say, and those traveling with young children, put the mask on yourself first before you help your small children or others sitting around you. And I thought, well, that's pretty selfish. Why would they say put the mask on yourself before you help other people? Well, no, actually, yeah, because if you're not breathing, how much help are you really going to be? Well, that's important to know. You have to be in a good quality state, so you do need to take care of yourself. Well, then I thought, if I'm going to be of a strange personality, then it's okay to take care of myself in strange ways, and people aren't necessarily going to understand it, but it was going to be worth it. My mother got me involved in a lot of activities because, as a flight attendant, she made okay money, but more importantly, she wanted to keep us actively involved in things when she wasn't around. She would have babysitters take us to where we needed to go, but she knew that the time that she wasn't there, we were getting some good, high quality experiences. And we were in an amazing congregation with not just one priest or pastor, it was a whole body of elders. And this congregation subscribes to the philosophy of it takes a village. Yeah, one child is the responsibility of everyone in the congregation. So I had amazing people in my life teaching me amazing things of discipline, like ballet. I loved my ballet classes because one of the things I learned was not only balance, and that's vital to success in life, but staying centered. Well, you know what? Staying centered, what did that mean? There were times when we had to do our exercises at the bar. We had to practice our different motions, our different steps. We had to get very, very good at moving in a certain way while we were holding onto the bar, getting the support. Like, I got the support that I needed from the people in my life. Then we had to master a technique of a fluid motion carried out in a beautiful way with strength and firmness and discipline. Why did they keep calling it a discipline? Were they going to hit me? Were they going to spank me? Were they going to scold me? I don't need no discipline. This is ballet. It's supposed to be fun. Discipline doesn't mean punishment. Discipline means control. It means skill. It means talent and success. Sometimes when parents would discipline their children, it was corporal. It was punitive. It was something painful. But true discipline is success. And the people in my life, in my congregation, were teaching me spiritual discipline. I couldn't believe how many good people I had in my life teaching me spiritual principles that would end up being the success, the foundation for my success as an adult. One of the most important people in my life said, "You know what? You're a really good runner." Well, yeah, I was actually in the Junior Olympics one year because I thought running would be fun. He said, "You know what? When you get upset, you go out and you run. Run until you get that really good feeling like you do when you're on the track. And keep running until you get that good feeling." Well, little did I know that that was giving me a nice hormonal rush. It was giving me a relaxation. It was giving me a chance to mentally focus. All I knew was when I got upset, I was going out for a run until I felt better. Okay, well, needless to say, I was running a lot. I got very, very thin. I got very, very strong, but I got very healthy. One of the most important things that I learned as a young girl was take care of yourself. And that could mean doing exercise, having personal discipline, having the people in your life that are important to you. Those are going to be the things that will carry you through life to create success. Now, one of the most important things that that taught me as a teenager was, you know what? When you know you're right, you don't have to worry about what other people think of you because you have not only the information that's accurate while those other people, you know what? Quite frankly, some of them are just stupid people. Some of them are so selfish, they don't genuinely care about you anyway. And some people are so narcissistic and arrogant that, you know what? Okay, I'm kind of looking forward to watching them fail. I'm going to go over here and be happy and successful while you're miserable and fail. Okay, if you ever want to be a part of my happy world, you can come be over here with me. Wow, how many teenagers have that kind of quality experience in their life? Not very many, but I did have some hard times too. And it was only because I had those amazing experiences and amazing people that I was able to handle the really tough times. That, yeah, every teenager, especially teenage girls in the United States in the 80s and 90s were having because, well, politics was getting kind of weird for women. It started probably in the 50s or 60s, but it was getting really bad in the 80s. Now, I had to live alone because when I was 12, I had some pretty unfortunate experiences in my home, in my family. My mother, not only as a single parent, she had some pretty bad experiences in her life, and they had effects, long-term effects on her. She struggled with bipolar disorder. She had an eating disorder. She was just very tired, and she was very worn out, and she didn't take care of herself the way she needed to, because as a single parent, there just weren't enough hours in the day. Well, she used to say very abusive things to me in her manic state. And there were times when she was so tired, she would get violent and she would do things that she regretted later. But in the moment, it was just too hard for her to handle. Well, she got married. Then there were complications with their marriage. Needless to say, being a little troublemaker that I was, I didn't help the situation. Well, I was in the hospital after I took an overdose of medication. I tried to kill myself. The doctor pulled me aside and said, "Why are you suicidal?" I said, "I'm not suicidal. I just knew that it was my spiritual responsibility to make the world a better place by not being in it anymore." And he said, "Who told you that?" I said, "My mom. She's been saying that to me all the time, that I'm the worst thing that ever happened to the world." Well, she was only saying it in a manic state, but I didn't know that at the time. A lot of what she said really did affect me, and I did believe it. So the doctor said, "Okay, you know what? We're going to move you in with your dad." I said, "Why? I don't want to live with him." And he said, "You know what? I think it'd probably be good for you if you don't live with your mom for a while. Let your mom and stepdad have some space, and we're going to go ahead and put you in a new situation." Okay. Let's go live with Pop. He's pretty cool. Let's see how that's going to happen. Well, he lived in an elderly society kind of apartment complex. And I said, "Okay, hey, Pop, what are we doing? What are we doing today?" And he said, "Yeah, so what do you want for breakfast?" And I said, "Yeah, you don't really want to do this either, do you?" And he said, "Well, no, you know, you're independent. I'm independent. Let's just be independently together." And I said, "Okay, well, yeah, he found a lady friend and he liked her and he spent a lot of time with her. So I was in an apartment. I was 13. All alone." And he said, "Honey, it's time for you to get a job." And I said, "Pop, I'm going to school." And he said, "No, that's okay. You can still work. I was working when I went to school." I said, "Okay, let's go ahead and get a job." You know what? About a month and a half later, he decided he wanted to move in with his lady friend. And he said, "Okay, you got some choices here. You can stay here or you can go back home." And I said, "I'm not going back home. I like living here. This is a great situation. I got my own friends. I got my new congregation. I've got my own, you know, school separate from my sister." And he said, "Okay, just don't tell anyone you're living alone." I lived by myself in that apartment with a bunch of old people surrounding me. And I learned so many things about myself. I learned about what I think and what I feel and what I want. And my relationship with God became something very different because it wasn't about anyone else in my family. It was entirely about me. And I got the chance to figure out what I truly wanted and thought and believed. You know what? I realized that I really like men. I liked men. I was very young and I thought, you know what? I'm actually becoming a woman now, 13, 14 years old, and I'm getting some attention from men. I wasn't gonna complain about that, but I didn't quite understand them. And I just have to sell this joke to the entire world. My son actually told it to me, but it's beautiful. The Spanish teacher was explaining that in Spanish, words are feminine or masculine. You need an article, el or la, in front of the word. And it was an adult class, and one of the adult students, a man, actually said, "Hey, teacher, is it el computador or la computadora?" And she got a little grin on her face and said, "Well, do you think it's more like a man or more like a woman?" And he said, "Oh, I'm not answering that question. That's a loaded question." And all the guys started chuckling to themselves. And she said, "No, you know what? We're turning this into a game. Men over here, women over there. You guys talk it out. You guys tell me if you think this machine is a guy or a gal." And the men just thought, "Oh, it's because..." Right. She said, "What? What are you guys talking about?" And he said, "Teacher, we got this thing down. This is a woman. We got four reasons why we think this thing's a chick." And she said, "Oh, pray tell. I got to hear these." And they said, "Number one, only their creator understands their internal logic." Number two, they speak a language that only computers understand. Number three, they store every mistake you ever make in long-term memory for future retrieval. And number four, you never stop buying accessories for them. And they all shook hands and high-fived and applauded. And she goes, "Wow, that's really good, ladies. Please tell me you got something to say in response to that." And they said, "Oh, yeah, no, we got this. This thing's a guy, and we'll tell you why. We got four reasons, too. Number one, they won't do anything for you unless you turn them on. Number two, you can give them all the information in the world. They still can't think for themselves. Number three, they claim to be able to solve all your problems in life, and you know it, in real life, when push comes to shove, they're usually the problem. And four, probably most importantly, you know if you had just waited 6 months, you could have had a much better one." Yes, okay. That's a beautiful joke because it's equally prejudicial and it's all completely true. But if anyone wants to know, it's La Computadora. Now, I learned at around the age of 13, maybe 14, that I love men because they're so simple. They are very basic creatures. I got the whole philosophy of, you know what, men, they're very much about one part of the brain at a time. We've got the same number of synapses going, but where women go from one hemisphere to the other, men pretty much stay in one place. So they can do amazingly good things, impressive things. It's just the more they have to do at the same time, the more their performance goes down. So it's okay if they're just basically the providers, the protectors, and the procreators, right? They need to make sure that the population continues to grow, where women are the nurturers and the multitaskers. And yeah, we can go ahead and do all the other menial tasks, the sometimes daily mundane things that men don't really want to do. But when we're working together, it's when it really works. I also learned that in my congregation, that headship is important and deep respect with a mild temper is what facilitates happiness in a marriage. Okay, yeah, becoming one flesh is good when you complement each other. That's another thing in my practice. I decided that I really couldn't be a coach, a life coach, what now has turned into a relationship coach, and advocate feminism because I think that feminism really does harm people because it originally came from a philosophy of women are going to be treated better. They're going to ask for better treatment and they're going to expect better circumstances for themselves. But over time, it devolved and it actually created conflict between the genders, between the sexes. It actually made more problems because where the original purpose was good, let's create something good for women. What it ultimately did was it encouraged by making it bad for men. It wasn't just a matter of let's have something better for women. It's let's make men suffer as much as we're suffering. And there are a lot of things about cooperation between the genders that doesn't have anything to do with politics. When it becomes political, like the medical industry, like the pharmaceutical industry, when it's about money, when it's about power, the fundamental good of it somewhere gets lost in the shuffle. What I learned when I was growing up was that a husband was ahead of his wife, but he takes amazingly good care of her. The woman respects and obeys her husband out of genuine, sincere love for him, and that when he feels that love, he is going to take her feelings and her needs into consideration because he feels appreciated. It propels and it fuels the good energy between them. And so, one of the things that I really loved about reading in the Bible was when a woman washed a man's feet. When I got married, I was so excited at the idea of washing my husband's feet. Let me tell you, I got a lot of flack from a lot of American women when they saw me not only soaking my husband's feet in Epsom salts when he got home from work, but scrubbing the dead skin off of his feet and then massaging his feet while he was sitting on the couch watching a show. Oh my God, how could you demean yourself and let your husband just abuse you like that? You are kidding, right? I loved to love my husband, and it wasn't demeaning to me to take care of him. And let me tell you, when I was done washing his feet, he had a very good feeling inside of himself for me. I got a big time payoff when I was done because he did treat me like a princess. You know what? A lot of women unfortunately think that the Bible is misogynistic, that it undermines women. Well, let me tell you, ladies, one of my favorite books of the Bible is Proverbs. One of my favorite chapters is 31. We got a whole job description there as a wife. And one of the best things about that chapter is the verse that says, a capable wife has her own company, she has her own business, and she goes to the market and she sells her product. She negotiates with men, she goes toe to toe in sales, and she walks away with a profit. Go ahead, read Proverbs chapter 31. The Bible says that a woman should own her company, not that she should go to work with men, not that she should compete with men, but that she should be working in the same mindset as men, but doing business with them as her own independent force. And you know what? Balance. Everything in nature is about balance. That if, again, you take care of yourself and you have an approach to life that's balanced and, yes, centered, you have to keep yourself healthy and centered. The spiritual principle is always about balance. Everything has an effect, a cause, a result, and everything keeps moving. Energy, the force of nature, everything between people, inside of people, around people is about activity and energy. There is no such thing as inertia. Everything you do is either good or bad. It's going to have a good or a bad effect. So that means that if you're not doing something good, you are by default then doing something bad. But let's think again about that principle of balance in nature. Now, one of the things that I did when I was young to try and fix me, my mom tried to take me to an acupuncturist. I saw these pictures on the wall. The Oriental have a philosophy that everything about your internal balance is related to external points on your body that have internal effects in different organs. Another philosophy basically of that same principle is reflexology. When you have pressure points on your hands and feet that you push on, you can do things to the different organs inside of your body to make them become balanced. And when they're doing their job in a balanced way, they're working together, then your body is taking care of itself. You don't need synthetics. You don't need pharmaceuticals. Wow, that's a really important principle. I thought the idea was good. The concept was good. But I didn't really know if it was true or not until I went to Asia with my mom. I was actually graduating early. And like I said, it was in the 80s. I was growing up. There was a song called One Night in Bangkok. And I thought, wow, you know what? My mom, she's graduating up to these higher classes in her flight attendant status. And so she was able now to fly to the Orient. And I said, you know what, Mom? I know what I want for graduation. I want to spend one night in Bangkok. And she said, oh, okay, cool. I'm going there next week. You want to come with me? I said, great. Are you going to stay there or can I be there alone? Well, I was only 17. What was I going to do in Bangkok alone? Well, she said, okay, you can have the hotel. And I thought, wow, okay. She called my bluff there. Well, this is going to be interesting. I didn't know that it was a 17-hour flight from Seattle. I went through Seoul, Korea, and Taipei, Taiwan. When I got to Bangkok, I had never actually been in a chair for that many hours, and I was constipated. I think maybe twice in my whole life. I had never been able to go to the bathroom. I didn't know what to do. And I said, Mom, this is terrible. I can't sit on an airplane all this long. I can't even go to the bathroom now. And she said, oh, don't worry, honey. I'll take you to my reflexologist. Well, I thought, Mom, come on. You honestly think hand massage or a foot massage is going to do any good. I think I actually need something, a pill. I think I need a pill. And she said, no, you don't. Well, no, it's not what you think, honey. So we go to this place. It's a interesting little building with a dark room and a chair. And I'm thinking, oh my God, this is like a really bad movie. Well, she said, no, honey, just don't judge it. These people got their act together. They know what they're doing. They're not like the United States. And I said, okay, fine, I'll wait and see. Well, very quiet man comes into the room and he sits at my feet and he starts pressuring my face. Ow! What are you doing? It hurt. I couldn't believe how much it hurt. And I said, stop, stop. You're not supposed to do that. And he said, oh, you know, having gone to the bathroom. I said, what? Mom, what did you tell him? Did you tell him something when I wasn't looking? She said, honey, I've been with you the whole time. I couldn't believe it. It was extremely painful, but at the same time, it kind of felt good. I went to the hotel after I was done, crashed in my bed. I don't think I'd ever slept that good in my entire life. About 3 hours later, woke up, ran into the bathroom, and the whole situation was resolved. Yeah, wow. And so I studied it a little bit more when I got back. By the way, Asia was wonderful, and yes, Thailand is very interesting. I'm not so big on the food, but that's okay. The principle of balance and harmony, internal harmony, and the energy, positive energy, and how the body is a powerful force to be reckoned with. You know what? Yeah. Everything in balance. Well, balance is also about moderation, and positive energy is the source of everything good. Well, you know what? A lot of people have the approach, the philosophy of having good things in your life. That's what creates happiness. Well, and doing, doing good things, that's good too. No, I also realized as a coach, my philosophy was going to be about being something good, and that would have the effect of doing something good. As a result, having something good would be the effect. Say that again. Okay, being good is the source, doing good is the cause, and having good is the effect. That came back again to the biblical principles that I grew up with my whole life from the Christian perspective of spirituality. Yeah, you know what? The fact is, when you have good personal values, when you have good priorities in your life, you are taking care of yourself. Again, putting the mask first on yourself, then taking good quality action in your life as a result of being in a healthy, balanced state. That will create amazing things, not only for you, but for the people in your life. Okay, well, you know what? Let me tell you something. Getting married was a good time and a good way to put those things to the test because shortly after getting married, I got pregnant. Wow. Okay. You know what? Growing up in a feminist sort of society, I won't even call it a culture, a woman was supposed to go to college and get a job and be the first woman president to make her mark. And you know what? Barefoot pregnant and in the kitchen was only for the inferior and the weak. Right? Okay. Well, but my husband was Mexican and they started having babies at 12 and 13, right? In Mexico. So what was I supposed to do with that? Well, my kids taught me a lot, and I always knew that my health and balance was most important, then my marriage was number two, and then my children were number three. Well, you know what? Again, that goes against everything in this country, women in this country. Well, when you have babies, they're number one, then your job, then your husband gets the leftovers. Okay, well, I didn't really subscribe to that either. I thought that taking care of myself made me a very good quality person for my husband. And as one flesh, when I took care of my husband, he and I became better people together, working in cooperation. So then when we would tend to our children, we would give them a better quality experience by being good people with them. It didn't matter if they didn't have the things because it was being the source, doing the cause, and having as the effect. Well, you know what? I always told my kids that, and I tried to practice what I preached. It wasn't until very recently, I'm going to try really hard not to cry here. It was until very recently that my daughter, who was 20 at the time, said to me, "Mom, what's going on?" I was actually in the kitchen and I was having a very hard time. She was in her room on the other side of the apartment and she could feel me. She could feel my anxiety. She came over to me and said, "Mom, what's going on?" I said, "Nothing, nothing, sweetie. I'm just okay." Well, the truth was, I was very worried. I was very worried because I had a financial situation that I needed to take care of, but I also had an obligation to my friends. I made a commitment to my friends, and I didn't know if I should tell her all of that. But I said, "I'm trying to make a decision, and I'm cooking right now, so you know I can't really cook and think at the same time." And she got real quiet and said, "Do we need to go for a walk?" I said, "Yes, we do. Thank you. Can we get out of here?" And she said, "Of course." So I got out of the apartment and I said, "Look, I love Marcelo and Francisco and Atanayala. I want to be with them and I want to worship God with them. But at the same time, I'm making $200 an hour now, sometimes $250 an hour. I need like $748. If I go to work for 3 hours instead of being with my friends, and I can make the money and I can just tell my friends that I'll go, you know, we'll do this another time and it's my service, it's my worship." But she said, "Do you need to pray?" And I said, "I think I do." So we were coming up on the coffee shop and I said, "But I kind of want to pray in Spanish. Would you be okay if I did it out loud in a public place in Spanish?" And she said, "Of course, you can go ahead and do that. No problem." And I said, "Can I hold your hands?" She said, "Yes." I just got to tell you, I love my baby girl more than anything. And so as I was praying and I was thinking about, I have to put my spiritual priorities first, but at the same time, my responsibility is my priority because my family has to be the number one thing in my life. And if I do have a responsibility with my family, but I have a commitment with my friends to do spiritual activities, which activity is more important? And all of a sudden, I got a calmness in my heart. And I wrapped up my prayer, and it felt really good saying it in Spanish. I love Spanish. And so when I opened my eyes, she could feel me and she could hear it, obviously, in my voice. And she looked at me real quietly, said, "So you know what you need to do, right?" And I said, "Of course. I'm going out with Marcelo and Francisco and Atanael tomorrow." And she said, "Exactly. We'll find the money somewhere." And I said, "Okay. Because if you put spiritual things first, all these other things will be added to you." Right. Okay. So we're on our way home. Walking down the street, we're not even an eighth of a mile away from the apartment, and all of a sudden it starts to rain, and it's very Washington weather and cold and dark and windy, and how poetic is the rain. But then up in the distance, I saw on the ground, on the sidewalk, it looked like, oh my God, it looked like money. And I thought, okay, this can't be happening. I'm hallucinating. And she kind of stopped a little bit. And I said, "Do you see that?" And she said, "I think I do." And I said, "What does that look like to you?" And she said, "I'm not saying it. Do you see it?" I said, "I'm not saying it." So we kept walking, but we kind of were walking a little bit faster. And then I said, "Oh my God, it's wet and it's soaking wet and it's getting fatter and fluffier. It's like Ensenada, how you say it? It's swelling up." And so I grabbed it and it was literally on a place on the sidewalk where there was no wallet. There was no bag. There was no house. It literally was on the one place on the sidewalk where it could not belong to any apartment or any home that we could return it to. I picked it up, and yes, it was a huge wad of money. 100, 200, 300, 400, 500, 600. Oh my God. 800, 600, 700, 800. It was $816 in cash. I couldn't believe it. I actually started crying and I said, "Honey, do you know what this means?" And she turned and she said, "Yeah, we're going out for dinner tonight." And I said, "That's right, sweetie. We're doing that fast food, extra super large size." And a lot of people would say, you know what? The blessing was the money. Even the people in my congregation would say, "Yeah, you know what? You put spiritual things first and the blessings." No, to me, the blessing was the person in my life, my daughter, who really did show me what important things were. It's not what you know, it's who you know. Well, you know what? Sometimes who you know is your family, and sometimes your children teach you the most insightful things in your life. Yeah, the money was nice too, but if it didn't come from one place, it would come from somewhere else. Being is the source. Doing is the cause. Having is simply the effect. And so what I've always taught my kids was know your true nature and be true to your nature. And that's probably why my daughter was able to be so insightful. She's an ENFJ. I don't know how much my listeners know about Myers-Briggs, but that's always been my passion, because it wasn't until I was 8/9 years old, I was in the third grade, I learned that I was an INTP. That was a big part of the reason why I was successful. It was a big part of the reason why I felt confident, and I taught my children the things that I did. I raised all three of my children very differently. Well, you know what? I really did love what I knew, and I knew that it worked because it was based on spiritual principles with accountability to a higher source and with the blessings from everything material and menial and monetary to genuine peace and happiness. Now, one of the most important things was being one flesh with my husband. Well, yeah, you know what? It was about communication too. And a lot of people, when they saw me and my husband, they saw the success that we had. They were impressed. They were also fascinated. They couldn't understand how we had such a good thing. It reminded me of an episode of Roseanne when her sister said, "Well, you're lucky. You got someone like Dan. Not everyone gets someone like Dan." And Roseanne, absolutely indignant, said, "Are you insane? Do you think he came out of the box that way? You know how much I had to put into that guy? He was not that way when we first signed up." Well, yeah, you have to put a lot of work into your marriage. You do have to take care of yourself in order to be a good woman. You have to take excellent care of him in order to create the unity and the bond and the strength of character that your marriage creates, yours, mine, and ours. When you have good, solid foundation of marriage, then the kids are okay with you taking care of yourselves and each other first, because they would rather have 2 ounces of high quality parents than 2 tons of fertilizer. Okay, and we all know what that means in a relationship. Leftovers, excrement, garbage, toxicity. It's very important to be able to say, "I am now 100% high quality for you because I love you and you are worth it." There were people in my life, in my congregation, who absolutely gave me the best of what they had in very small quantities, because they did not have an abundance of an excess to just, you know, throw around. When they gave me the stuff, it was the good stuff. Now, another thing was, I made my husband wait until we were married. Yes, I get all kinds of offers and I get all kinds of questions from all kinds of men. In my industry, I've always been a professional woman. I'm not going to have sex with anybody but my husband. Let's just get that out on the table. My husband waited for me until we were married because, again, as the spiritual principles of no sex until marriage, that meant that I had to make sure I was getting the good guy. I needed to get the right guy. Well, you know what? For us, courtship was about, do we really want to get married? The whole point of dating was to determine if we were compatible, to see if we wanted to get married. Sex was something that would come after marriage. Because if he really did love me and if he really did want to marry me, he would wait. Okay, yeah, no, the sexual revolution made that a very non-American philosophy. But I knew that if I was dating him and he was willing to wait for me, then it would be worth it, right? Because we weren't going to get married unless it was right. So we had our little dating. Well, one of the things he actually said to me that completely blew me out of the water, again, first of all, because he was Mexican and I'd never heard a Mexican talk this way, a Mexican man talk this way, he said, you know, I have a question for you, actually. Let's say we've been married for, what, I don't know, 10 years, and we had a family and everything was going pretty well. I loved you and you loved me, and we didn't really have any major problems. But one day I came home and said, honey, I'm going to be honest with you because we're always honest with each other. I did something stupid and I completely regret it. You know what? I had an affair. I had sex with a woman. I don't know her. I don't love her. I'm probably never ever going to see her again, but I just got really horny and I couldn't say no. And she came on to me. And so honey, I still love you. Please forgive me. I'm sorry. It'll never happen again. He said, what would you say? I said, well, of course I would forgive you. What kind of a question is that? He said, why would you forgive me? I said, because first of all, you're a man, so you're horny all the time. Second, you're a Mexican, so you're practically told to be unfaithful from the time you're born. That's part of your manhood. Third, women are whores, and if she attacked you, I absolutely would believe that you couldn't say no. And more importantly, if we have a good relationship, why would I throw it away for one stupid act on your part? And he said, wrong. I said, what? He said, no, you don't accidentally have sex with a woman. He said, I want you to know that if a man ever has an affair, it's because he's already left you in his heart. And I said, whoa, okay, really? He said, yeah, no, if a man's physically with another woman, even though he's still married to you, that means his mind and heart are somewhere else. He's just living with you. Probably out of habit. And he said, that means you can't be unfaithful to me either, ever. And I said, well, I don't want to be unfaithful. That's got nothing to do with you. That's entirely about God. But wow, that's pretty good. I like what you just said. Okay, so you know what? I really do believe that the fact that I was a virgin when I got married, my husband is the only man that I've ever been with, and every man that I ever do business with, as a colleague, as a client, as even a competitor, I just say the minute that I see them looking at me, you know, what can you do with it? You know what? I'm married and it's never going to happen. Do you still want to do business? That's very liberating, ladies. I want you to know if you know that your standards are not negotiable, men actually respect that and they do appreciate it and they will leave you alone if you have the confidence and strength of character to say no. I deserve the best of the best, and the best of the best is a man who will wait for me for marriage. Now, having said that, about a year and a half ago, I was at Starbucks with my husband, and yeah, we have our time together. We still date. She was staring at us, this lady from kind of the other side of the store, and she was watching us, and I said to my husband, I said, do you see that lady over there? And he said, of course, I've been watching her looking at us the whole time. I said, I've seen her here before. Do you know her? Because I don't know her. He said, no, I don't know her really, but I would recognize her if we were in the store somewhere. And I said, okay, well, I'm not going to look at her because she's making me uncomfortable. Well, she actually came over to our table. She approached us at our table and said, can I ask you guys a question? I said, sure. What's up? I've seen you around here. She said, are you two having an affair? I started laughing. I said, what? Why would you ask that? I said, kind of in a way we are. But no, seriously, why would you ask me that? And my husband got this grin, this huge grin on his face, because now it was just the two ladies talking. And I said, I'm not even going to guess why. And she said, well, first of all, because you're both wearing wedding rings, but they don't match. So that's a pretty good indication that you're not married to each other. But man, every time I see you in here, you guys are so, you've got this great energy and you flirt with him all the time. And it's pretty obvious that you're horny and he's hot and you like each other a lot. There's no way you could be married and feel that way about each other. And I said, wow. That actually kind of makes me sad. I said, yeah, we've been married for 26 years. And she said, oh my God, to each other? I said, yes. She said, how do you do that? I said, because I still act like his girlfriend. I still treat him the way I did when we first got married. And he really does like me. He likes me. Yes, he loves me, but he likes me a lot too. And that's a big part of it. Yeah, when you do take care of each other, when you do good things with each other, when you have a good, healthy mindset, I decided that I needed to teach people about relationships, not just life coaching, but relationship coaching. Because again, what really is your personal story? What do you have to offer? The people in my life, the experiences that I've had, the principles that I was taught, they are what make me insightful about relationships. Yes, I've gone to college. Yes, I've taken online courses. Yes, I've read books. But you know what? I've had some more important things like good people and good experiences that reach a deeper place. And when people see the success that I've had and they feel the happiness that I feel, that means more to them than what they read out of books or what they see on television. They know that it actually works. Yeah, you know what? I think mental illness is real from time to time, but I don't think most people are mentally ill. I think the pharmaceutical and mental health industry undermine their success and their health and their happiness. When people are taught how to score in life, when they are taught how to succeed in life, then they have the tools and the resources, but the mindset, they don't panic. They create success in their life. So what I'm doing now is creating the website, but I'm also creating the books, and I'm now producing a video series. My video series, one of them is going to be about the Myers-Briggs personality profile system that I use not only in my personal life with the relationships, because it really helps me build and strengthen the relationships I have socially and personally, even professionally. One of them is going to be about how to be a true woman and embrace your feminine power to create success in your life. And the other one is, you know what? The coaching program that I was doing for over 15 years as a professional coach, those are things that everyone should be able to have access to, the information to create success in their life. Even if they can't afford to hire someone like me, I could charge up to $250 an hour if it's a Kaiser Permanente executive. Well, yeah, the lady down the street, she can only afford about $30 an hour. But it's good information, and everyone should have access to it. So go ahead and check out the website, www.infinitylifecoaching.com. Check me out on LinkedIn. I put a lot of articles and a lot of posts, and you'll see my videos in the next few weeks. If you want to ask me questions, go ahead and give me a call on the show. If you want to reach out to me on LinkedIn, you can do it there too. Relationships, they are the foundation of everything we do. Insight, proactive. Being is doing. That will generate having in your life. Thank you so much for listening to the show today. My name is Gabrielle Cardona. This is yours, mine, and ours.